Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Roll the Roos podcast. I am your host for the day, Raj Baines. Joining me is Sebastian Stafford Bloor. Jack's not here, which is why I'm presenting. I think people wear that out for themselves by now. Anyway, how are you, Sebastian?
I'm well, Raj. Well, I'm a little bit. I've got a little bit of the old flu, but I'm actually.
I was going to say, why are you lying to me? Yeah, the last thing you are as well.
No, I'm not. I'm not well, but I am. I will live through the day, I reckon. So I'm okay.
Yeah, that's a real concern for people in Bath. You've like shunned modern medicine. Is it like herbal remedies and things?
No, we don't have modern medicine in Bath. Basically, there's a guy that kind of goes around with a mobile medicinal cabinet tugged by a horse, and you go up to him and he vends elixirs basically rather than medicine.
Sounds interesting. Yeah. Very Victorian sort of image you've given.
Pretty much. It's like sort of things which are ground from the roots of rare flowers and that kind of stuff. It's very interesting. Interesting time.
Talking of interesting, if we dive into the football,
yep.
Which is something we don't often do on this.
No, we
podcast.
Don't. We haven't done that for a while. Have we dived into the football? No.
Tottenham have won a league match, which to say we haven't lost one, it's been a while since we've won one. And it didn't seem likely for the longest of times.
No.
I mean, how was it in the stadium? Did you get the feeling that people had sort of given up on it at 2-1 with like 5 minutes left to go?
It was a bit crushing because obviously at 1-1, throughout most of the first half, it got a little bit moany. I mean, it got a little bit, I mean, and not unreasonably so, actually, because Tottenham pretty bad.
They were awful. I mean, if we hadn't have won that game, that would have been a poor performance.
Definitely.
With hindsight, the fact that they were so bad and still won makes it all the better.
Well, the thing is about that is that it was a strange game in the sense that quite a lot of our midfield play was okay. I mean, there were a few bits and pieces from Eriksen which were very sloppy. But, you know, the fullbacks got involved. We managed to put Rose into a few good positions. But the interaction between Kane and Janssen just isn't right because, you know, there's none of that kind of... When you've got sort of... I know they're not playing as two outright forwards, but when you've got a 10 and a 9 playing in the same formation, you'd expect one to push on a little bit, one to drop deeper. And it's only their second start together. So, chemistry is still to come, of course, but...
I think they did that a little bit better in the start of the second half. There was
definitely some improvement. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody had had a word with one of the two of them and told them what they should be doing. But they were getting each other's way a little bit in the first half. And sort of Janssen does this thing where he defers his role to other people. So even when he's in a good position, he'll be quiet about it, which is, as I've said before, I think it's too polite for his own good.
Well, it's kind of what you'd expect. It's a sort of like he lacks a little bit. I mean, obviously he lacks confidence in the goal scoring sense, but he also lacks a little bit of confidence in the off the ball running sense too, because he very rarely goes beyond the last defender or tries to play on the back of a centre back. He wants to come deep. He wants to come into space and he wants to lay the ball off to an Eriksen or, I know he wasn't playing, but a Lamella type or an Ali, whatever.
Instinctively, I think his first idea is always to
drop.
Get his back to goal and hold the ball up for somebody else. I think that second phase is something that's missing with him.
Yeah.
Sort of if you watch with with players that do that and do it successfully, they'll come deep, they'll drop the ball off, they'll lay it wide or lay it back to somebody, and then they'll spin their man and get into the area. Yeah. And, you know, 5 or 10 seconds later, they'll have a snapshot.
Well, that's
and it's just that second thing that it's missing.
Yeah, because as soon as he starts doing that, and then the sooner you're actually turning defenders around, because a lot of our play happened in front of that, you know, West Ham's back four. And what they've struggled with this season is movement. They can't track runners. They can't deal with players that sort of push wide into the channels, and they can't cut off the passing angles into them. And all we really did, some of our football was very neat and very tidy, but it didn't really twist their shape in any way at all, contort them. So, but listen, we've criticised Janssen a bit. But what I will say is the run he made for the first goal was excellent. And the little snapshot he had, you know, I mean, was
that an handball?
I didn't think so. I still don't, having seen it back on TV. And he was pretty unlucky not to score. It was a very, very good save that kept it out.
It's almost like, given that he had no time to think about how to miss
That's it,
he did better.
Great connection and, you know, full-blooded hit. And, yeah, it was... And that was a very good moment. Of course, you know, minutes later, he would drag Winston Reid down in the box. But
it's an odd one, because there was an incident in the first half, a similar one, where Kane was sort of hobbled down in a similar sort of situation. And you know what? I've got every sort of respect for Mike Dean. If he wants to be sort of go by the letter of the law and be really sort of pernickety about those situations, which he has been so far this season, then fair play, because people will know that that's what he's going to do. So you should look out for it, and you shouldn't be as daft as Janssen was to be caught out doing it and doing it as obviously as he was. But at the same time, he has to be slightly more consistent about it as well. If he's going to be giving them for things that essentially these are incidents that we've seen happen for time and go unpunished, and it was sort of like an unwritten rule that you'd have to do something terrible to get given a penalty against you, and it was sort of a very rare occurrence before this year, before that sort of initiative was brought in, and it probably still is with referees that aren't called Mike Dean, but he needs to be sort of, he can't be giving him 1 minute and not giving him next. I mean, I think I'd have been far more annoyed with that had we not won the match and had we not been given our penalty. I think our penalty was as obvious as they come.
Even the press conference afterwards, even Bilic said there's just no question that that is a penalty. I mean, I don't even understand an argument. Which, I mean, I saw a few people talking about, oh yeah, Mike Dean loves Spurs, doesn't he? I was like, well, I don't understand how you can't give a penalty there. I mean, it's a terrible tackle.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I saw some West Ham fans telling that defender to never wear their shirt again.
Yeah, nor advise.
Apparently on Twitter.
Well, I know that's a really silly reaction, of course, but I mean,
it's because he'd only just been brought on, hadn't he?
He'd been brought on specifically as a, because he's normally a holding midfielder, but one who can also play as a centre back. So he came on really as a third centre back, and the thing is, when you watch it again in slow motion, like, he misses with the initial tackle, Son steps around him, and then he drags him down anyway. It's mental. As a bit of defending when it's 2-2 in stoppage time, thinking, all I have to do here is not make contact. You just think, nope, drag him down. Penalty. Absolutely a penalty. What I'll say, Raj, about that Mike Dean thing is that I don't think you can ever get consistency from referees here, because it depends. Obviously,
they're
it depends
robots.
On the offense. Well, they're not robots, but also, like, you, at a corner, there are always going to be a lot of moving parts. And so the interpretation not only relies on the actual incident, but on the view of the incident and what's going on around him. And
there's a really good camera angle, actually, of Mike Dean watching Vincent Janssen for that penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he's telegraphing the fact that he's just sat there fucking staring at him.
Yeah.
And because Janssen's, you know, so concentrating on Winston Reid, he's missed it, but
it was very, very obviously a penalty. I mean, they haven't done the other end for me, but you saw it immediately. And knowing it was Mike Dean, you give Mike Dean the chance to involve himself in a game like that, and he will always take it.
What do they call them these days? Celebrity refs.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit unfair, because I quite like the way Mike Dean referees, actually. I mean, there are far worse referees in the league. Okay, he's a bit quirky, but I'd much rather be my team refereed by him than someone like I don't know, a Kevin Friend or an Andre Mariner, who is, Andre Mariner is consistently awful every time I see him, or John Moss. You know, I mean, Mike Dean is far from the worst referee in the league.
You complain about those refs, but the one thing I've realised since watching Championship football more regularly is that anyone who complains about the standard of the football hasn't seen the standard of the officiating.
Yeah.
Because it genuinely is like watching Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles do their work on a week, and it's absolutely fucking appalling.
I watched a bit of Leeds Newcastle over the weekend, and you know, the refereeing in that was pretty shoddy.
Yeah, it's consistently poor.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a slight bugbear of mine.
Yeah, no, we can get that out.
The end of the game, I think.
Yeah.
How did the stadium turn? Because the equaliser was sort of unexpected. It was a really odd one, like when I was watching it, because it was the most obvious thing to do to pull it back. And Kane, it's not as if he was in a particularly like secretive position. He was literally stood at the far post.
Stood by himself on the back.
And there was like two or three people waiting to cut that ball out. So the fact that it got to him is in the manner it did, and you know, the what's his name, Darren Randolph, sort of palmed it off into his feet. It was it's a really odd goal.
I
was watching it, I was almost waiting for some sort of like flag to come or something, because it felt as if it was just too easy to go in.
I felt a little bit sorry for Darren Randolph, because the thing about that goal, like from a West Ham perspective,
it's a catch 22 foot keeper though, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. You can't not.
He gets beaten if he doesn't come for it, and if he comes for it, he takes it out of the path of his covering defender anyway. But the thing about that was that, like, first of all, like when the ball gets to Son at the byline, there are two West Ham defenders there, and the one thing you're told there in that situation is don't foul him and don't allow the cross. Just stand off him. If you've got two of them, there should never be an angle across goal. And then secondly, maybe don't leave Kane alone on the back post. And it was very understated. I remember looking at the clock and it said 87 minutes. And I remember thinking then, this game's lost, to the point where I was actually, I was writing in the defeat into my article, because it was just... It serves
you right, that does, mate.
It does a little bit, but I mean, it was kind of... and then it happened, it was very understated. There was no inevitability about the equaliser. There was inevitability about the winner.
It was more relief than joy, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
The unspoken thing about it was the fact that that's West Ham's last ever league visit to White Hart Lane.
Yeah, and they weren't going to win.
I think there's like a collective, I don't think anyone in the Tottenham fan base, as far as I've seen, has sort of openly started to acknowledge the fact that this is our last season in that stadium yet. It's almost as if we're sort of pretending it's not happening so that it doesn't happen, even though we've got this giant thing that's being erected around our current stadium.
Which is bigger than White Hart Lane now. It's actually taller than White Hart Lane. Yeah.
It's a third of the size in terms of like how large the stadium, how much of the stadium has been built, like a third of it's been sort of shelled out, but it's already bigger than the existing ground.
It's very primitive. I mean, it's literally just a superstructure, but it's already taller. But it's
wider as well.
It's much wider, the kind of the area that it encompasses.
You know, it reminds me of, you know, when you watch like an alien film, like when they, like a First Contact style Independence Day, and there's always that cliched shot of the shadow of the spaceship going over a city. And that's what it feels like, doesn't
right at
it,
the beginning like of Independence Day when it first emerges out of the clouds.
That sort of a thing. Where like you've got a cityscape of New York suddenly being covered over by a shadow because
aliens.
Good
old aliens. What was interesting, after the equaliser, I knew we were going to score again, because West Ham just broke. They were just in a lot of trouble, and you could tell that they were completely gone. And all the things that they'd done really well for 87 minutes, they stopped doing. Because actually, they'd taken Payet off by that point, they'd taken Sakho off, and they brought on Zaza and Nordveit, and they kind of Sam Allardyce'd it. They sort of decided that we're not going to try and play anymore. We're just going to sit behind the ball. And
they actually look quite dangerous on the break.
They
look
very dangerous on the break. They played very, very well. Payet was great, and I thought Saka was good. And Zaza came on, and Zaza is just, I don't know what's wrong with him, because I think he's quite a good player, but he is just fucking awful at the moment. I mean, he had a chance to kind of put Payet in for 3-1 at one point. I remember didn't.
Yeah, he left that far too long.
Oh, it's just awful. Yeah, and they just stopped playing, I don't think we even had to do very much to win the game. I thought what we'll say is that for both goals, I was impressed by. If you trace both of those moves back to their source and see Harry Winks's input into them, I remember he kind of, instead of just passing the ball to like a receiving the ball and sort of passing it to a Rose or a Walker or, you know, to Dembele. Oh, well, Dembele gone by that point, or an Ali or an Eriksen. He was actually driving the ball up the field, which was really impressive for someone that's, you know, was making his first Premier League start. It was
that's as impressive a sort of full Premier League debut as I've ever seen.
Yeah, he was terrific. It was interesting because I kind of decided before the game I was going to write about him because I don't.
That's the story, isn't it?
Well, that was really the story, and I've watched a little bit of Winks before, and I genuinely think he's going to be a good player, and he came on, and you know, if it was me in that situation, I think I would be more of a kind of give me the ball and I'll try not to fuck up for 10 minutes. You know, just sort of give it to Dembele every time you get it. Just as long as the opposition don't score from a mistake you've made, you've had quite a good 10 minutes. But he was, from the first minute of the game, he was pushing the ball in all directions, pushing forward, you know, out to the channels. He drew a nice, quite a neat little foul in his own half. He wasn't afraid. And it was, he left quite an impression because it was just, he just looks like a proper ball player. He looks like the player everyone pretended that Tom Carroll was. You know, people got terribly excited about Carroll and yeah, he could pass the ball a little bit and he was okay, but you know, never with that much purpose. Whereas Winks just, he wanted the ball. And I think that's that was very telling for, you know, about a player's character, very illustrative of the kind of person that he is.
Yeah, he looks like he's got a far better potential in terms of filling out than Tom Carroll does.
Well, I'd argue that already has filled out quite a lot from last season where he looked like much too small to play Premier League football.
He looked like a child.
And I remember I was at Everton and I was talking to Adam Nathan, actually, and they came to warm up, and because he was a sub that day, they came up to warm up right in front of us. I remember saying then that he's grown already. He just looked bigger.
Sound like an auntie at a wedding.
Yeah. But he had grown, so yeah.
Yeah. I still get that to this day, like whenever I see like family, oh, you've grown. It's like, no, I've been this height since about 12.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got bigger, haven't you? No, I'm 24 now. Yeah. It's growing. That's just your natural reaction to seeing me.
Oh, you've grown. Yeah.
Yeah.
So great. No, I was. It was. And you know what? I know we. It's kind of peripheral, but the Pochettino Winks celebration was one of the loveliest things I've seen in a while, Lane.
I wanted to talk about Pochettino because obviously the. A lot is rightfully made of how he promotes from within. And,
yeah.
You know, he had some very nice things to say about the identity of the team and sort of how he wanted to use the academy to sort of create that identity, which is the sort of thing you want to hear a manager saying, especially at a club like Tottenham that was starting to lack an identity before he was brought in. I think it's fair to say after the sort of the AVB misadventure and then the horrors of Tim Sherwood. But he has this knack, I think, of timing his promotions right. It's not as if he's ever just throwing in the kids and seeing what happens. It's not a case of sort of seeing what sticks if he throws enough shit. It's he grooms them, not in a Gary Glitter way, but in a managerial way. And it's almost as if he gives them the odd taste. Like Josh Onam is a good example. Like, it became a joke last year that how many times he'd be brought on with sort of 5-10 minutes left in a game to sort of get a taste of the environment. And you could tell from even the start he got in the Carling Cup and whatnot that he was far more comfortable with surroundings and far happier in his own skin in that position because he'd been given an opportunity to sort of, you know, be a bit more pre-exposed to what was going to come.
Yeah.
And with Winks, it's the same story, even with... when he played Ryan Mason in the derby and Dele Alli and stuff like this, I don't think there's ever been a time where he's played somebody and it's backfired on him.
I think the key there, mate, is that what was really noticeable about Winks was that he was like technically ready for Premier League football, emotionally ready too. Like Winks is, I mean, I have recorded the game, the full 90 minutes, but I haven't quite seen it back yet. So I don't know if this comes across, but Winks' body language off the ball is very, very positive. He's not like, you know how, you know, you remember when you're at school and you played in a team in the year above or something, and you didn't really, you didn't shout and you didn't, you know, you weren't.
No, I did.
Well, you might have done, but you were like 7'4". So that's slightly different. But like he was very vocal. And when the team was needing a lift and when, you know, when there was, when the side needed some temperament and a little bit of direction, he was quite vocal. Not necessarily in a Vertonghen way.
I think you can see that in sort of the way in which he carries himself. Yeah, though. Yeah. Like he doesn't look afraid.
No,
I think that's half of it. Like
that's totally Tom, it. Yeah.
Tom Carroll looks as if he's gone as a footballer for Halloween when he steps on the field. He looks like he's, you know, dressed up as someone that he wants to be, and he's sort of like won a competition. He's a make-a-wish kid that's been given 10 minutes at the end of a game.
Yeah, go and play for Spurs. Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't look physically imposing. There's nothing about him that he, you know, would scare an opponent. And I'm not saying Harry Winks is scary, because he's I think he's got the face of a child still.
Yeah.
But there's purpose in him, and there seems to be an intent about him. And I think that's probably half the reason why Pochettino likes him so much, because he's a bit of an aggressive man himself.
I think so. I mean, I think it's very interesting to note the difference between players who, when they're in that sort of debut situation, I know he's played before, but like a starting debut situation, there is a clear demarcation line between players who want to keep the ball.
It's not a small game either, Tottenham.
It's not a small game, it's a derby. It means an awful lot to West Ham. But there's a difference between a player that wants to keep the ball. Yeah, nice little dig. And players who actually want to use the ball to hurt an opponent. And Winks was the latter. He was I am good enough to be here, and I have the conviction in my ability to be an asset to the team, not just the 11th man on the field. And I think that 11th man on the field thing is a way of describing a Tom Carroll sometimes. And I think Tom Carroll will have a perfectly respectable career in the Championship eventually. He's not a bad player at all, but the difference between the two is pretty vast. And Poch was, I've been in a few Pochettino press conferences now, and he's not very communicative or very talkative. He's kind of just say as little as possible and get out. But he was absolutely beaming. He would have talked about Winks for 25 minutes straight, I think. He was like a proud dad in there, sort of just this big smile on his face and talking about what an emotional moment it was when he ran over to him. And he was singing his praises. And he's also very big on the fact that Winks is a Tottenham fan. And that he sort of, he gets what it is to play for the team by implication to play against West Ham in a game like that. And he was very proud, I think is the way of describing it. And it was lovely.
Harry Kane,
yep.
To move on to another one of our academy graduates, although I think that's forgotten these days, isn't it?
He's
now Harry Kane, face of Tottenham. He obviously won the game for us. I don't think it was the most difficult two goals he's ever scored, but probably two of the most we've enjoyed.
Ballsy penalty. I mean, you still got to take the penalty. You still got to, you know, put it away, of course.
He's got a fairly good. Has he missed a penalty since that one against Hearts when he was like a child?
He missed against West Ham in the 2-2, but scored the rebound.
That doesn't count as a miss, though, does it?
No. But
should be like an asterisk against that. If you get the tap in,
you get half a penalty. Yeah.
Done all right by my books. Yeah. Anyway, he scored the goals. Essentially, he got the headlines, and he said after the game that sort of the contract situation isn't something that's troubling him, but he's, from sort of seeing him a couple of seasons ago to now, he's obviously been media trained to within an inch of his own personality. So he's not one that's going to say anything other than the right things. Mm. And we've seen this before. I mean, Gareth Bale said all the nice things and the right things in the build up to his Madrid move. So
on your birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk is cheap. If Harry Kane leaves on my birthday, I swear I'm going to stop supporting this club. Anyway, talk is cheap from footballers, as I say.
Yeah.
But the brick wall that is apparently and rumoured been hit about sort of money and things, even though he actually sort of did break from script a little bit and say that money wasn't an issue for him regarding the negotiations and that they're going fairly smoothly. Where do you stand on that? Do you think it is one of those situations where you just have to pay the man what he wants or what he deserves and get on with it? Because it's not the first time we've heard this in recent weeks. Hugo Lloris is apparently in a very similar boat. Where do you stand on that? I think me and Jack talked about it previously and sort of said our piece on the contract things, but it'd be nice to hear what you sort of think about the balance between keeping his wage structure and sort of living within our means as much as possible, but at the same time not losing our best players.
Yeah, so well, I think that the important thing here is that if you break your wage structure for one player, it's never just for one player. Because that's the nature of modern football. You say to Kane, I'm going to give you X, and then, you know, then other players want X too, because and it creates a whole nest of problems that people don't really think about sometimes, is that, you know, you start elevating people financially above each other, and it's like any other workplace in the country. You know, people want parity. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm not really in a place to judge, because I don't have a strong enough hold of the club's finances. But what I'll say is that it's just a symptom of the game, man. It's how it works. Does Hugo Lloris deserve to be paid more than he currently is? Yes, he does. Does Harry Kane? Yes. Because these are relative things. These are, you know, when these players go off to England or, you know, French squad meetups and you know, they talk about what they're all earning and, you know, what they... when they tally that with their own perception of where they are in the game and as a player and what their sort of perceived worth is, it causes issues, and there's no easy way around that. So,
I mean, it must. I mean, you say they have conversations about it. I don't think they'll be as explicit as that, but
no, I think but you know what I mean. They'll be aware. A lot of these guys share agents too, and so you can't forget the agents in these situations. And you know,
the fact that Harry Kane will walk in and know that Jordan Henderson's earning more than he is. Or
there you go. There you go. It's difficult, and but then, you know, on the other side of the coin, and in fairness to the club, the stadium needs financing. You know, and it's not easy. It's not as simple as people sort of... I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, we'll just fucking break the wage structure. Okay, but we're on the cusp of something that we've been waiting for over a generation now. And it's a balancing act. We all knew it was a balancing act. Everyone went into this with their eyes open. This is one of the situations where you have to rely on the loyalty and the long-sightedness of players and their ability to kind of... defer their demands for a season or two. And also, let's not forget that, from day one when we walk into that stadium, that is not the end of it. You know, Arsenal proved this. It doesn't really work like that. You don't walk in and it's suddenly, well, you know, there's this big stadium full of endless money now. We can pay everyone what we want. In time, it elevates our paying capacity. But
even if the finances aren't straight, you look at West Ham and sort of getting used to new surroundings, it's not always the easiest thing in the world.
No, it's...
I think even a club like Bayern Munich had problems when they first moved into the Allianz Arena.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's right. And I don't know. I think this is one of those sort of ways in which Championship Manager or Football Manager kind of changed the landscape, is that, you know, when you're playing that and new player wants a contract and he's important, you just give it to him and you worry and let somebody else worry about it. You know, it's that, and that's just not how it works. I don't have any inside knowledge. I've spoken to people that do, but that's their knowledge, and I don't really want to kind of relay that secondhand. It's not really right. I don't know. I mean, I don't see any evidence that either really wants to leave. And I've certainly heard nothing that suggests that either wants to leave. It's just a case of they would quite like new contracts. They're quite deserving of new contracts, and the difference between what they want and what the club are willing to offer seems to be quite different.
I mean, we heard much the same sort of story with Christian Eriksen at the start of the season. And I think they settled on something around the ballpark of 70 grand a week. Mm. So that's, in terms of the wider landscape of the best teams in the Premier League, that's nothing.
No.
I mean, I think it's, having looked at them fairly recently, I think there's a big jump between... Tottenham in fifth in terms of net wage spend and Liverpool in fourth, and then another huge leap between Spurs in fifth and Everton in sixth.
Yeah.
So we've made that fifth position our own.
We're kind of on a bit
tables.
Of an island in wage structure sense.
Yeah, and yeah, I think there's actually a jump between last season and this season of 11 million as well on the wage bill. So that accusation that Tottenham aren't paying people is you know, not founded out in truth. It's yeah.
Fucking Moussa Sissoko.
Yeah, half it is Moussa Sissoko's wage, apparently. Is there anything else to talk about from that game at all?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean,
it was a wonderful moment. I mean, it's one of those.
Oh, mate.
Like, I was in such a mood with about 5 minutes left thinking, sort of, we're going to lose this game. And with West Ham, it's not a case of, there's almost like this, when it's a proper derby, when it's Arsenal, you have this, you're sort of in, eating yourself from the outside in. And it's horrible, and you know, you feel like you're pranging out. But with West Ham, it's almost like fighting a kid brother, in that you just, the only reason you're doing it is so that they don't think they can win.
Yeah,
it's just keeping them at arm's length and just putting them in their place. And especially with the sort of that year where they had their treble T-shirts, it's happened again, and all that sort of bullshit. You just don't want to give them an inch, because they'll take, you know, a T-shirt essentially.
It was nice to sort of. I mean, I'm not to be. Well, I'm going to gloat, but that kind of it's happening again thing is so small, because it's sort of like it's now we've got to a situation now where like any time West Ham ever score against Tottenham, no matter what's happened in the past, and no matter how many times they've been beaten, they're always seeing the same thing. And also, especially small, because obviously the moment that penalty was given, they all filed out of the stadium, and they all left early. I think there was about a third of their fans left at full time, if that, which I understand, but like, you know, and then obviously sort of our fans are...
They're the ones that were too pissed to stand up.
Yeah, well, let's be fair. A lot of our supporters had also headed for the exits on about 85 minutes. So
serves them right.
Yeah, like if you're not prepared, like I understand sort of travel and stuff, but...
No, I don't. If you go to a football game, you see it all the way through.
Well, that's what I believe, but I don't want to be too harsh on people that have, I don't know,
I will.
Got
You're
kids
an idiot
or
if
something.
You leave the game.
No, but like, if people have got small children or
don't,
you know,
take them.
Yeah, I know, but like that, then you know, what if someone had done that to me when I first went? You know, when my first ever Tottenham game, we stayed right to the end, and it was with my friend's dad, and there were three of us, and his mum was there as well, and we'd driven up there, and there was every reason to leave 5 minutes early. And we didn't, and I'm forever grateful for that. But you know, so I suppose I'm a, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to criticize people too much. Criticize West Ham fans leaving, of course, because it's, you know, West Ham, fuck them. But yeah,
no, I don't like leaving sporting things early. I think it's a bad precedent. It just feels wrong to me.
I think it defeats the object of going. I mean, if you want convenience, don't go to live sport, because it isn't a convenient thing to go to generally. Like at any kind of elite level, Wembley's a fucking nightmare if you don't leave early, but you just tolerate it and you think, I am going to be stuck outside Wembley Park for a long time. Yeah, it's ugly, but you know.
Well, it's that difference between being a supporter and being somebody that's attended in expectation of being entertained.
I think so, yeah. You got to sit there.
I mean,
I
win, lose, or draw when I go to Huddersfield and I don't even support them, I'll wait until the final whistle. Even on occasions where my mate that supports the club wants to leave early, I'll still wait and make him wait with me, and I'll give him a hand off the field no matter what the result was, because I'm not there to just enjoy myself.
No.
I want to sort of, it's a community environment to me. And I mean, that may be an archaic view of the game and what football is. And I'm well aware that there's plenty of people that don't share that view of the sport anymore, and that's not what they gear for.
Well, I think there's far more people that think that way than there are. I think we notice the people who leave more often. But the vast majority of people stay. I think...
The other thing is that the people that leave most often, they're the people that will sort of... the first people to pipe up and say, oh, you've got no reason to be talking about Spurs because I've had a season ticket for 60 years or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but how much do you really care about the club when you just sort of fuck off every fucking 80 minutes is there and you sort of, this is me, I'll see you next week.
The only exception, I would say, in games that I've been to where I thought this is too much was, I can't remember what year it was, but there was a League Cup game against Arsenal where we lost in extra time to Sami Nasri scored a penalty and basically the entire thing emptied. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is a bit awkward, because it was just the whole away end was full, of course. And it was just, there was just row after row after row of plastic. And yeah, it was, we looked a little bit small then, but and a bit sort of surly. But generally, like, you know, I don't think Spurs fans are particularly prone to leaving early. Your point is right though. I'm not sure I really agree with that. I've held a season ticket for 400 years, therefore, because they're two entirely different you know, I think it ignores some of the financial realities of the game. I think when people sort of brag about the well, I've been to every away game this season, I'm more of the mindset of kind of, if you can afford it, good for you. But in these times, it's probably not right to kind of whip people for not being able to do it. Because I don't know many fans who wouldn't, if given the choice, like to do that themselves. Because away games are great. And, you know, if you've got the time, if you can get time off work, time away from family, fantastic, good for you. But I don't know. As people get older, they've got different priorities, of course.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Draw a line under that one, then. Ended up being a far better experience.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And it appeared to be for the longest time.
Yeah.
Next, tomorrow night, because we're recording this through the day on Monday, we've got Monaco away. So we'll be playing in front of five people before they hit the casino. It's a must win, isn't it? After sort of the last few results, this is
really
do or die territory, isn't it?
Yeah, we really have to win that one, I think.
Is it sort of game over Europa League if we lose that, do you think?
I don't know. Well, it's going to depend on what Cisco do, of course. I wouldn't be averse to sort of defaulting into the into the Europa League. So I think, you know, without that sort of cumbersome group stage, it could be quite fun. Just getting the table up in front of...
Yeah, but then do we not just become everything we've railed against for the past few seasons, where we've complained about these teams from the Champions League dropping in and diluting our competition?
It's different when we're that one. Okay, so we...
Spoken like a true member of the elite.
That is it, exactly. If Monaco, draw, they qualify. But if Monaco draw and Leverkusen beat CSKA, we cannot qualify. So we really need to win. And even if we win, I think we'll have to beat CSKA at Wembley anyway. So Two wins and we're through. I can't see a situation where two wins doesn't get us through, because obviously Monaco and Leverkusen play each other in the last game, and one of them is going to have to drop points, or both of them.
We can't finish top, can we?
No, we could do. We could do.
Huh?
Yeah, beat Monaco, beat Moscow, and hope that Monaco and Leverkusen draw, and we would finish top.
Moscow are fairly shit as well, so we should be able to beat them.
I fancy our chances of beating them at Wembley, yeah.
But still, he's still got that Wembley thing overhead where they seem to just fucking shut down every time they go anywhere near it.
Yeah, or there is a scenario where we lose tomorrow and win on the final day and we still qualify, because if Cisca beat Leverkusen...
That's not happening.
Which I don't think is going to happen. No, I agree with you. We would just need to beat Cisca ourselves and hope that Monaco beat Leverkusen.
Yeah, I'd rather not leave it up to that.
I think we just have to win our two games. I think that's the...
What do you think about this Monaco game? Because they're obviously going really well.
Yep.
In one both the Champions League and the French division.
Yeah.
When they played us, it was the first time that he'd tried to play this system with Dele Alli deeper, and it backfired. I think we spoke at the time about him sort of being slightly too over exuberant and maybe not giving Monaco as much respect as perhaps they deserve given their form, and they capitalised with two fairly quick fire goals and we weren't able to come back fully even though we had the chances. So that, given that, you know, I think it's a completely different situation to the Leverkusen games, where I think for three quarters of the games, if you split them into two halves, Leverkusen were better for that entire game at Wembley and for one half at their place, and we were better for the first half at their place. But with Monaco, I think it's far more evenly balanced. And I think they're far more beatable than Leverkusen are. I think they're actually not as good a team. Especially,
that's what I think too.
Stylistically, as well, I think Leverkusen, because they play in such a similar manner to us, when you fight fire with fire, sometimes it doesn't go too well for you. But no. Monaco play a different sort of football. You can't discount the amount of confidence and sort of just muscle memory that victory gives them, and the fact that, you know, it might sound cliched, but sort of winning is one of those things that once you start doing it, you learn how to do it. And that's why teams often, you know, get those roles on and go on unbeaten runs and whatnot. And they're in the midst of their own good patch of form. So you can't discount against that. This is, I think in terms of quality and things like that, then we've got every chance. Do you know, is Toby Alderweireld going to be back or not?
No, he will not be fit.
Any sort of date on him? Because he was supposed to be fit.
He is a doubt for Chelsea, but he's possible for Chelsea.
Right.
Alderweireld is out. Lamella is out.
What's wrong with Lamella? He's got some sort of strain or something.
I don't know, but when the players were warming up, he walked out of the tunnel to sort of chill by the touchline, and he was walking fine. Also wearing a dreadful coat, by the way. If you're listening, Eric, you know, change up your wardrobe.
I don't think you can talk, mate. We've got screenshots of you from you're dressed like you're one of the wet bandits from Home Alone with your woolly hat on and granddad's fleece and the coat over the top. It's appalling. Get up.
I was warm. That's all that mattered.
Caretaker chic.
I don't know. I don't know. I think, Ali will be fit. Son is fit.
Son did really well, by the way, at the end of that West Ham game.
Yeah, he did play well. He was a little... I mean, he's had a fairly awful 6 weeks, and that was the best I've seen him play in quite a long time, probably since the City game, because it's the first time he's actually had an impact on a game since that City game, which is good to see.
Set up with a goal, won the penalty.
Yep, he did. And I would expect to see him start tomorrow. I actually think we'll probably... I wouldn't be surprised to see a return of the 3-5-2 tomorrow. I thought that worked really well away from home at the Emirates, and our shape was rubbish on the weekend. So I think he'll change it again. Just it didn't work.
Yeah,
at
we
all.
Didn't talk about the shape. What was it? A 4-3-1-2.
I don't know. It was certainly a back four. Wanyama was the deepest midfielder and wings.
No, sort of like a. a diamond in midfield, but almost like two of the sides of the diamond had shat themselves and dropped deeper.
Yeah. It had no real shape.
What shape would that be? It's not a diamond, like a rhombus.
It's kind of a rhombus, yeah, midfield rhombus.
Jesus.
The midfield, what he tried to do, I think, was...
Somebody on a tactics blog somewhere has definitely used the phrase...
Midfield rhombus. Yeah, not in a kind of derisory way, I'd assume.
No.
Just... I don't know. What he tried to do was have Wanyama as the deepest midfielder and have Winks, Dembele and Eriksen in a kind of fluid three. And it was just a mess. Whatever he was trying to do didn't work. Bosch was very agitated. He wasn't happy with the position of his fullbacks. He spent most of the first half shouting at Kyle Walker to move up the field. So I think that the 3-5-2 is beneficial, because obviously when you have those three centre backs, you've got wing backs and you have that width, because we don't have any width without them. So we'll see. I don't know, but I don't expect to see Vincent Janssen play tomorrow. I think some will start, maybe as a sort of, I don't know. Just wait and see.
We'll wait and see. I think that should be our approach to the Champions League now. What the chuff happens, because I'm not sure any of us are too aware of how best to approach that competition. It's been a slightly different experience compared to last time. And maybe this is what happens when you don't have Luka Modric, Gareth Bale and Rafa van der Vaart in your team.
Maybe.
Anyway. By the way, the more I see of sort of how the Champions League operates and sort of those players specifically when we had them, I don't think anyone can deny that squad underachieved.
Did anyone deny that? I mean,
I think it is. I think people sort of have a very sort of rose-tinted view of that time because it was so entertaining.
Well, people still think it was Redknapp.
the further away I get from it, the more I'm convinced that with a better manager, that team is...
That team should have won the league. That team had a chance to win the league and were just, you know...
You had a motivated Adebayor when you had... Because he's in a contract year.
Yeah.
You've got the best midfielder in Europe in Luka Modric. You've got a generational talent in Rafa van der Vaart. Okay, he's got hamstrings made out of string cheese, but he's wickedly talented and a left foot that's been sort of kissed by angels. And Gareth Bale that's on his way to becoming one of the biggest worldwide superstars in all sports. So it's a ridiculous that all three of those individuals are of a level that we don't have at the moment. Harry Kane's on his way to getting there. I think there's a possible ceiling there for Dele Alli. I think Hugo Lloris is of a similar world class to them and is a contemporary of theirs.
Yeah.
But in terms of sort of, you know, Luka Modric and Gareth Bale are dual European Cup champions.
Well, probably the only players from the current team that get into that side are probably Lloris, Alderweireld, Kane, and I think I'd probably, if you have Dembele alongside Modric, I think I quite like that midfield.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I mean, it's a more talented team, not a better team, but a more talented one.
I know. I think we've got a better team.
Yeah,
now.
Well, without question, it's miles.
But we had better individuals.
Miles ahead, like in terms of thinking and its complexity, and managed by someone that appreciates the game on several, you know, additional layers, several additional levels. Even
can you imagine how good Luka Modric would be in a Pochettino team?
Yeah. If he was coached, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking the other day, I saw a rumour, I think maybe this morning, is that QPR are trying to sell Sandro. Can you imagine a fit Sandro in a Pochettino team as well? He'd be absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, he was...
At his best. I don't think I've ever seen anybody who has a knack of timing slide tackles as well as I saw Sandro.
Yeah, he was...
when he was at his...
A fit Sandro would have been a phenomenal player. What a tragedy. Yeah. What a tragedy.
Yeah, his career ruined, sadly.
Yeah, he's over. West Brom, Christ.
Jesus, yeah. Anyway, what do we talk about now?
We do a bit of Chelsea and then kill it?
Yeah, we can do a bit of Chelsea, yeah. So we've got to go to Stamford Bridge. We don't win at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea are playing really well.
Yep.
We've not lost so far this season. Narratively, this looks like a Chelsea win.
They haven't conceded since September.
That's what banter dictates.
Yep.
I think Harry Kane will score because he's got his own London Derby record to keep up. But I think we'll probably lose 2-1 or something like that because their shape's fantastic. We shouldn't play with two forwards again because that was the other thing about West Ham. We know they play a 3-5-2. So why would we play with two forwards when...
We won't.
3-5-2 is specifically designed and was implemented in Italy to nullify strikers playing together up front. It's a slightly odd decision.
No, I think we will... we'll play with a... Kane will start ahead of Janssen, all being fit. We'll see Son. We'll see if he's fit. That's the game I want to see Lamella back for, hopefully, because, you know, Lamella is Lamella. And obviously, Alderweireld is essential. Even if he's 80%, he should play.
Would you be tempted to play Wanyama and Dyer with Dembele in there, just sort of go
I'd stack that. I'd stack three players in the field. I would probably sacrifice... I wouldn't start Ali in there. I don't think I would even, if Lamella is fit, I think I would leave Eriksen out. And I would just put in the nastiest, biggest, most horrible midfield you could possibly want to play against and just say to kind of Matic. I think you have, I've watched Chelsea probably more than, I've seen them more than any other team this season and they've been impressive every time. And, the common detail within them is that they've had midfield supremacy in every game. And Kante and Matic from being... Kante is a great player, we know this. Matic was fucking ropey at the beginning of the season. It's kind of, because of the balance he's been offered by Kante, he's really started to be a bit more ambitious. And he's a lot more of his passing seems to go forward and between the lines than it did back in August and September. And I think if you can apply a little bit of pressure to him and stop him playing with any freedom, I think you go a long way to sort of restricting the supply to sort of Hazard and Pedro and obviously Costa. Dealing with Moses and Marcus Alonso is different, but we've got two very good fullbacks too.
Danny Rose will be missing.
Will he?
Yes, he's suspended.
Is he suspended? Okay, we'll say that. So, Christ.
Ben Davies isn't fit either.
Okay. All right. Well,
just a shit in your cornflakes, man.
Yeah, that has done that properly. okay, I didn't know that. Fine. Well, then. Well, have a fun afternoon, Yambatongan. okay, I'm sure he'll enjoy that. He loves fullback. We know this.
Against one of the best buying teams in goodness. The league.
Yeah. Well, Moses is playing extremely well. So whoever plays there has to have a very, very good game. Very disciplined game. And actually, I'd almost be tempted. I mean, Rose would have been good because Rose would have been very aggressive. And I'm convinced the way to beat Chelsea is to be aggressive, not to sit off them. I think if you can push those two wide players back and throw in half just by through positioning, I think you're in good shape. Because teams have become quite docile against Chelsea. And they're very mechanical at the moment. They're playing very, very well. But I still think the midfield is the thing because that defensive unit is quite weak. As a collection of players, it's not very impressive. And the real strength in their defense is from Kante and Matic, shielding and stopping sort of Luis and Cahill and Azpilicueta having to do much one-on-one of anything. Hence the kind of the Wanyama, Dembele, Dyer trio of death.
I mean, if we're being serious, there is some piss to be taken out of Gary Cahill and David Luiz if we want to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think
they just need to be put under the requisite amount of pressure.
Yeah, I agree, and I think Azpilicueta is in that back three for what he can do with the ball. He is not necessarily that comfortable without it in that role, because obviously he's a converted fullback, of course. But I think I think all three of those players have got a mistake in them. And I think I'm not that negative about it. I think we'll be okay. I don't think we'll win, but I don't think we'll lose. I don't. I mean, I.
That means you think we'd draw then.
Well, I think so. I fancy our chances. I don't. We're a good team. I mean, we're not playing that well. But then, you know, it's exactly the same. I feel exactly the same as I did going into the Arsenal game. You think this is where we're going to get beaten, but then, you know,
I think Chelsea are a lot better in terms of sort of
they're more efficient than Arsenal.
Yeah, they're mentally much less fragile. Yeah. They stick to task better. I think their system is has a lot less fault built into it intrinsically.
They are micromanaged. Their shape is anywhere, whereas Wenger is, we know, much more of a laissez-faire kind of manager. You know, in terms of style and what he wants his players to do. Conte is kind of the cliche puppet master, and he wants to control every little movement that goes on. And you see him in the technical area.
He would physically walk onto the field and put people in position.
He absolutely would. He does not. I don't think I've seen him sit down at any point in the season. Like he is in his technical area.
Do you think he's got like hemorrhoids or something?
Maybe that, but he also, hemorrhoids or no hemorrhoids, he does. He is very he's the most active coach I've seen. In terms of his tactical instruction, he never shuts up. And
that happens to men of a certain vintage, doesn't it?
It does, for vintage. I like that.
You're speaking of it from experience.
Yeah, well, I reckon I'm 5 years away from being of a certain vintage, but you know, I'm not there yet. I'm 32. So
you think 37's the end point?
I think so. I think that's when you kind of you start on the downslope. Yeah. Probably.
Is that when you start wearing like walking boots as normal everyday footwear?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Jeans and shoes on a night out. Yeah. The ultimate crime.
Yeah.
That should be punishable by death.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. White shirt tucked into your blue jeans with like your work shoes on. Jesus.
And a blazer.
Or a waistcoat. Yeah, you're like a snooker player who's dressed down.
Yeah, exactly.
We've only got a couple of questions. We'll get them out of the way, and then we can have the rest of the afternoon to ourselves. The first one is from Chris Leakes. It sort of touches on something we had a bit of a rant about earlier. He says, I had a couple of people around me leave at 2-1 this weekend. Is it ever acceptable to leave a match early? I think we answered that
we've
one.
We've done that one. Yeah.
It's not, Chris, and I think that's what you wanted to hear. So I'm glad you agree. Unless you were sort of following them out of the ground, and then, you know, you need to have a word with yourself.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the point you're making, mate. The other one is from Anders, who says, should Dyer go mental again at Stamford Bridge, regardless of outcome?
No,
I mean that's my highlight of last season, but I think it's sort of a time.
It suited the moment, that performance. It was like, right, well, we're not going to win this, but we're going to fuck you up while we don't win this, and that was fine. But like, no, none of that this time. It's just 11 players on the field, no eye gouging, please. just play the game, because, you know, also
Eric Dyer he's got properly nasty. Did you hear him after the
Ander Herrera moment? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be seeing each other soon. I don't know what he's gonna do to him. I want a
fucking serial killer.
He's gonna have something tucked in his sock.
Oh jeez. But we gotta be smart. Just because the crowd will be up for it, and it's at Stamford Bridge, and it will be lively. But it's a different team, you know. It's a different Chelsea team under different management. It's just like, just can't beat them. Don't, you know, because last year it was a hollow victory. Like, I mean, we all feel good about it, but in reality, we're just compensating for what, you know, for the more obvious issue.
Whenever I see those highlight packages come across my Twitter timeline, it's still a wonderful thing to look back on. Just
but those
4 or 5 slide tackles that Eric Dyer put in was ridiculous. Yeah, Danny Rose got involved.
It's the equivalent of, if you're a fighter pilot in a war and you'd had one of your wings shot off, it's the equivalent of saying, right, well, I'm going down, but I'm going to plow my plane into an enemy, you know, an enemy building. I mean, okay, sort of satisfying, but, you know, there's a...
No, but they got away. like Eric Dyer got away with it to an extent.
Oh, well, I see what you mean. Yeah, he didn't. He wasn't.
It's like you plow your plane into a building and then you somehow get out alive
and you make it back. You know, well, I guess so, but then. You know, my defining memory of that night is actually
Eric Dyer should have been sent off in that game 4 times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had 3,
and he got a yellow card.
the tackle on was it the tackle on Fabregas? there was no intent to anything but hurt him, and it was just like even 20 years ago that would have been a red card.
I think Ryan Mason came on as a sub and his first act was to scythe down Fabregas out of nowhere. joyful.
Fabregas Fabregas during that game must have suffered 4 straight red card
challenges.
He
fucking deserved to. He came out, didn't he, and said that he wanted to not cost us the league.
Yeah.
So he put the target on his own back.
I'm not denying he got what he deserved. More than that, he got what he deserved for his reaction to the Lamella thing, because that was just pathetic. But
I mean, he did get stamped on, but still.
Yeah, no, but the thing is, he didn't get stamped on. He got trodden on. And it's just, it's not the same.
That's a synonym of stamp.
But it's a difference between being stepped on and stamped on. He acted as if Lamella had amputated his
hand. It was his hand as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just like, come on, mate.
Properly gone in.
Like, rolling around and then getting up and then showing his hand to the assistant referee. He's like, mate, grow some fucking balls.
Watch those highlights of that game again. The memory of some of those challenges. I think I've forgotten half of them because there must have been over 10 separate extremely poor challenges in that match. I think Kyle Walker should have got sent off in first half. He had a couple even before we were 2-0 up and Kyle Walker had already started. It's almost as if we had this plan B sorted and Kyle Walker's that thick he started. He went in early. Like, no, mate, we only start.
We're 2 up. We're fine. And then
we were told if it goes to shit, then you start kicking them. Not now.
Dear. It was it was carnage. But we need to play. God.
I still never understand how anyone in the aftermath of that game could have complained about their conduct.
I didn't like Dembele. I didn't like that.
Oh, fuck it. I wish he'd properly pulled his eye out. I've said this before, Diego Costa, he gets away with it because he thinks there's nothing coming back at him. But he's not going anywhere near Moussa Dembélé this time around because he knows.
Yeah, but the thing is about I don't disagree with that. But if you're gonna go down the retribution pathway, go through the back of him, you know, properly go through. Don't rake his eyes because it's just.
I don't know. Did you see when England played Australia at the Olympic Stadium the other day? They were on the way to losing, so Sam Burgess just lamped someone and broke his eye.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, he didn't break his eye; he just split his eye.
I didn't like that at all either. I thought it was
cheap. Just you union people.
No, I'm a big Sam Burgess fan. You know this, but I love the way he plays. Huge admirer, but I didn't like that.
If you're going down, start punching people.
Yeah, mate. That was very Willie Mason though from the what was his name? Stuart Fielding. From that test in Australia when Mason just hit him straight in the face. I just thought.
Do you not remember when Jamie Peacock knocked him out?
Well, afterwards, I do, but like it was. I'm fine with the Peacock reaction because the Peacock reaction was in defense of a teammate. I wasn't fine with the Willie Mason just having a swing at like a guy who was. I thought that was just cheap. And then also the elbow on Sean Long as well in the same game, which was just terrible. I mean,
I love the fact that in International Rugby League you can punch someone and not even be yellow carded.
It
warms my heart. It warms my heart.
I've heard Brian Noble speak about it. Even he think that's a red card. That's just punching a defenseless opponent. That's not
the best one was in the World Club Challenge when Leeds were getting absolutely pummeled by North Queensland. What's his name? I forget now. Our prop chinned James Toomer and it's got the biggest cheer of the afternoon because he broken his nose. Mitch Garber, it was. Broke his nose, got a yellow card and a 3-game ban. and left the match a hero. And I think he won an online poll for match of the man of the match after that, and the club had to give it someone else. all right, let's move on to his last question. Anyone you would like to see brought in or sent out? In brackets, Sissoko in January, it'd be ultimate shit to bring him in the summer and sell him in January.
I'd
personally want to give him more time, but just for the entertainment of seeing him sold that quickly.
I don't have any warmth for Sissoko. He doesn't belong at our club.
He hasn't done anything to earn...
He hasn't done anything.
I wrote about this, that he started off on uneven footing because his reputation precedes him, and that's nobody's fault but his own.
Yeah.
He got a suspension for doing something silly, which I personally think was slightly harsh, because I think he's...
I thought it was an accident, actually.
I think the man has no control over his own body. If you watch him play football for 5 minutes, I don't think he's clever enough to aim an elbow without looking first.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was slightly harsh, but I think he's done himself no favours with his performances so far. And the fact that he wasn't offered that honeymoon period or the good grace of a new signing, because people are well aware of what his temperament was and
how he wrote this previously. So I remember subbing that article. Yeah, he doesn't deserve the benefit that he has stuff to prove to us. It's not the same as show us that you're worth the investment.
It's almost akin to what Adebayor did that first season.
Yeah, exactly. Adebayor came in and got his head down, and he played extremely well.
And then stopped as soon as he got his contract.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that one, but Sissoko hasn't given us anything. I don't think his effort has been lacking. I just think he's not a very good player. I mean, he's clumsy, and
I'd love somebody to ask Pochettino what his thinking was behind that, because if it is true that that was a signing that he sanctioned and pushed through, I'd just be like, what exactly did you see there, Paul?
Well, I think it was desperation. I think there was nothing left on in the cupboard. Right, the only thing we can get is this guy. It's the only possible,
But if there's not on the shelves at Tesco, you don't go home and make a shit sandwich, do you?
Well, if you're really hungry, you do, yeah.
You'd eat your own shit.
No, not literally a shit sandwich, but like
pay $30 million for it.
No, you go into Tesco's and there's nothing left except the Tesco's basic range. If you're really hungry, you are going to buy it and you're going to risk the salmonella.
I don't think Tesco Basics is going to give you salmonella, especially if their lawyers are listening. Go to Seb Stafford Waitrose Blore.
Yeah. Mate, I'll have you know, I also sometimes go to Marks and Spencer.
Oh, is that when you're slumming it?
Yep.
Yeah. What's that? What's the posh one called? That's in like the Lake District. There's another one, like a boutique sort of shopping one. I can't remember what it's called. Is it like Booves or something?
Don't know. No, never heard of it.
I think it's Booves Shopping or something like that. Yeah, I'm not sure. But there is a supermarket. Maybe if you Google it, that's like, I think it's even posher than Waitrose, and I think it's one of those things that's maybe only up here. But yeah, there's that, because I remember my man wanting to go in once. Anyway, that's riveting enough. I think that'll do us.
That'll do.
Solid hour of football, and only one brief dalliance with rugby to discuss the joys of punching. I'll never relent that punching should be as part of all sports. I think it's the way to solve any problem.
I think it is. I like a bit of punching, but I like a bit of punching in rugby. I'm never a fan.
I want to see footballers punch. I just want to see what it'd be like if like two people kicked off.
It would be football. For both of them. I imagine it would be incredibly emasculating.
fighting Bridget Jones.
It wouldn't be punching. It would be flailing. It would be slapping, essentially. So I don't think you want to see that as much as you think you do.
Using the underside of your fist to
it'd be like the punching in WWF. That stuff. Slapping.
There'd definitely be a hair pull or something football fight.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it'd be entertaining. And then there'd be Moussa Dembélé gouging eyes around the back. Yeah. Eric Lamella, Eric Lamella's got a career in mixed martial arts awaiting him once he's finished this.
Eric Lamella's the nastiest player in the Premier League.
I absolutely love. The other thing is, if we'll just quickly touch on Lamella, I think it is fair to say that his creative output is something we've been missing, especially with Christian Eriksen being off the boil, to say the very least.
Yeah, we haven't created anything. I mean, it's you know, the only way we create at the moment is, you know, wide. There's nothing else.
And I think Eric Lamella is probably the player that's statistically got the most direct assists for us in the past few seasons. So it backs up in that he has that extra quality. It's because he's so unorthodox, he's so unpredictable, the lad probably doesn't even know what he's going to do from minute to minute.
There is a touch of the kind of the Yannick Bolasie's about him. But he... I don't think even the sort of the fiercest Lamella detractors can deny it. It's a big problem when he's not there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they can though, because
they'll try. But like, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone sensible says that anymore. So.
It's like the same way that people say Steve Bannon's not a racist. I think that's the same sort of.
I think that's a fairly flimsy argument. That one, isn't it?
Yeah. The alt-right winger is what they might call him. It's a good pun. It's a good place to leave it.
That's well played.
Should we call the... Do you reckon we'll get like a story on Breitbart if we call the podcast alt-right wing?
Or that Milo cunt will start following us. Yeah.
He's a Tottenham fan, isn't he?
No place for Tottenham. In Tottenham for him. No place at all. Get out. Never, you know, just no place. Absolute scum.
Okay, yeah, I'd disagree, but I don't think there's any part of my body in which I'd wish to do that with you. How do we end the podcast, Seb?
Follow us if you want.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter.
On the old Twitter.
@RTR_pod. Go on our website, RTR. No, is it Roller? What the fuck's our website
you
called?
You fucking built it, yeah.
It's rtrpod.com. I know I had it right the first time.
Okay.
And then Acast as well, we're on that if you want to Google iTunes. Leave us iTunes reviews because Jack says it helps and I think it makes him feel better about himself. By the way, Spurs have definitely muted him without shadow of a doubt. He's tried really hard, bless him, this past week to get pictures of like Josh Onoma and she tweeted and they've blacklisted him. There's a picture of like his avatar and his thing on a pin board in sort of the communications department.
It's just a toy elephant with a load of darts stuck into it, basically.
Do not engage
with this man, with this elephant.
Yeah. Poor man. It really hurts him.
I know. He hasn't been the same since.
If anybody from the club is listening in this is to sort of like see what the thought is amongst fans, can you please take Jack off the blacklist, please? You're destroying a man's life. And
He needs it. You just embrace him once.
Getting into the cold, dark time of winter, and you know, it's that time of year where people start needing to call Samaritans and things. So if you let Jack just, you know, throw him a bone, send him a picture of Josh Onoma every now and then, you don't know how much good you'll be doing.
Yeah, even Fazio, like, you know, just a quick, you know, just a hello. I mean, even Fazio would do. I mean,
oh, bless him. Anyway.
Okay, well, should we?
That's enough. That's enough. We'll see you at the same time and same place next week.
Bye.
What the fuck was that?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.